This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Area Papers, dated March 18, 2016. We'll continue with the obituaries in the Decatur Herald and Review. William Bill Augustus Alexander of White Heath died Tuesday. Doesn't have a date here. Tuesday. Died Tuesday, March 15th. He was 78. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. today at Mackie Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, March 19th, at Centerville United Methodist Church, 3 miles north of White Heath on Lick Skillet Road. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to Centerville United Methodist Church, care of Darlene Alexander, or to the Alzheimer's Disease Education and Referral Center in Silver Spring, Maryland. Maple Point Home in or Maple Point Home in Monticello. Virginia B. Bilyeu, 98 of Moquegua, died Wednesday, March 16th. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, March 21st, in the First United Methodist Church of Moquegua. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, March 20th, in Seats Funeral Home, Moquegua. Burial will be in Bilyeu Cemetery, Moquegua. Memorials may be made to the First United Methodist Church Music or First United Methodist Church Youth. William Doyle Lamb, 81 of Decatur, died Wednesday, March 16, 2016. Memorial service will be held at First United Methodist Church in Decatur at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 19th. Visitation will be in the library after the service. In lieu of flowers, we welcome a memorial for the First United Methodist Church or Meals on Wheels of Decatur. Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Center is serving the family. Robert Leonard Lindholm, Sr., 84 of Lovington, formerly of Park Forest, died Wednesday, March 16, 2016. Memorial services will be held at a later date at the Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery in Joliet. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Foundation. McMullen and Young Funeral Home, Lovington, are in charge of arrangements. Edward E. Marshall, 93 of Decatur, died Tuesday, March 15, 2016. Funeral services to celebrate his life will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 23rd at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 22nd at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery with full military rites, conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated later. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Gary Gene Ridgeden, 72 of Vandalia, formerly of Brownstown, died Tuesday, March 15th. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, March 19th at Geese King Claggett Funeral Home, Brownstown. Burial will follow at Mount Carmel Cemetery, rural Brownstown. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until service time. Memorials may be made to the Mount Carmel Cemetery or Four Mile Christian Church. And now to the opinion page in the Decatur Herald and Review. We will continue with a letter to the editor there. Words that we need to better understand and value. There are certain words that can, depending on their definition and usage, determine whether relationships between human beings become destructive or creative, as follows. Number 1. Paradox. Paradox is not just puzzling riddles. We all, like Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof, have sometimes said, now on the other hand, but on the other hand, now on this hand, but on the other hand. It needs to be remembered that Tevye later had a change of heart after having disavowed his daughter's conversion to the Christian faith. That became a beautiful resolution of a paradox. If life's most troubling riddles are unsolved, this leads to the abandonment of hope. Number 2, literal. We have all heard at times someone say, "Now I mean this literally." To some, the word refers to the shell of meaning versus the inner, intended meaning. Example, Jesus is teaching, if your hand offends, you cut it off. The literal meaning was not the intended, since Jesus taught that evil proceeds out of the heart. Number 3, essence. Once ballyhooed as an ephemeral concept, essence needs to be better understood. For example, some evangelists approach people of other than Christian religions as totally wrong, while in essence, Jesus continually included and saw value in the faith of people whom the prevailing temple leaders rejected. While the Supreme Being has given us a universe of color, as in the color spectrum, as well as of black and white and gray, there is in many arenas a strong tendency to see things in black and white. This means that the opposing group is only right when they go all the way with our group. It is time to embrace God-given pluralism, not only in religion, but in all arenas of life. Signed, James P. McClary, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to a program within the Decatur School District that allows teachers to receive their master's degree while in Decatur, in a partnership with Eastern Illinois University. The Decatur Education Association and a local donor, more of the district's teachers, are able to study for their master's degree. The participation has helped reduce the cost, and holding the classes in Decatur has made it more convenient. It's part of a plan for Decatur schools to grow their own leadership, Superintendent Lisa Taylor said. Thumbs up to the hacker that leaked the NCAA basketball tournament pairings before CBS Sports had a chance to reveal all the brackets. Normally, we don't go in for people stealing information, as in the case CBS and the NCAA got when they got what they deserved. In this case, they got what they deserved. In an obvious money grab, the network expanded the bracket, unveiling to a two-hour show, and kept fans waiting and waiting to reveal the brackets. The experts can talk all they want, but most fans want to know which teams are in the tournament as quickly as possible. Thumbs up to the Stratus Food 2016 Casas for Casa fundraiser, which should kick off shortly before Easter. Stratus Foods is the major sponsor this year, so one of the playhouses will be built to resemble a food truck. That playhouse is being constructed by remodeling contractors Doug Davidson and Brian Crafton. The other playhouse, a Victorian mansion, is being constructed by KLH Construction, with some painting help from the men's group at St. Paul's Lutheran Church. The playhouse soon will be on display at Hickory Point Mall, and raffle tickets can be purchased at a variety of locations. Thumbs up to the annual Decatur St. Patrick's Day Parade, which is always a great way to celebrate the Irish spirit. The annual parade is sponsored by the Knights of Columbus Council 577 and is always a sign that spring is just around the corner. Thumbs up to the Old King's Orchard Community Center for a special March Madness night that gave families a chance to enjoy some times together. The basketball-themed event included family games and craft activities and encouraged parents and their children to spend some time together doing some fun things. The center is also planning an Easter egg hunt for Saturday. Thumbs up to the Macon County Emergency Management Agency, which is offering free programming of NOAA radios every Thursday this month. The NOAA radios are recommended and relatively inexpensive way to be aware of all sorts of weather information. The radios can be programmed, however, to exclude certain information. The programming will be available at Walgreens at 4994 US 36 next Thursday and at 1311 Illinois 48 on March 31st. On the front page of the Decatur Herald and Review, just getting warmed up, Millikan program teams with science-based firms for practical experience. A trio of Millikan University students are working with a Decatur-based company on scientific research that could have a significant impact on the booming wind turbine industry. Seniors Kyle Leadlove of Belleville, James Safford of Danville, and Austin Evans of Lovington have been working with 300 below as Millikan's first science and entrepreneurship research fellows. One of their main projects is to test the structure of gearboxes for wind turbines. The research is intended to see if the gearboxes last 300% to 400% longer when its parts are cryogenically treated, said Casey Watson, associate professor of physics and astronomy. We're trying to change what they learn to come from well-established businesses, Watson said. This is exactly what science-centered businesses are all about. Fixing parts at the top of a tall wind turbine can be difficult, which is why Watson said they are partnering with 300 below to see how the parts could last longer by improving the structure and avoid the need for repairs. It can be expensive to troubleshoot in the field, Watson said. If we make it more resistant to damage, it's possible for it to wear a lot less. The company has been one of the biggest supporters of Millikan's Institute for Science Entrepreneurship, Watson said. The institute, which Watson co-founded with biology professor David Horn and chemistry professor George Bennett, is seeking to provide opportunities for Millikan students and faculty to work with science-based companies on the invention of products and delivery services. We're looking for more partnerships just like this, Watson said. We're starting to get there. The work is an opportunity for the students to gain experience outside the school's labs, Leadlove said. Not every student gets the chance to do this, Leadlove said. Grants provide the funding that is needed to pay for the work of the students, Watson said. In addition, a sponsorship from Busey Bank provides funding for an ongoing speaker series on campus. The students see the research partnership as a chance to learn how science-based business runs, as 300 Below CEO Pete Pollen and his son, Prescott Pollen, provide the students with insight into the company's operations. State Senate passes spending bill under veto threat. Springfield. Democrats and Republicans in the Illinois Senate dug their trenches a little deeper Thursday as the stalemate over the state's budget continues. Democrats voted to approve a bill that would authorize spending $3.8 billion on higher education, social services, and other programs that have been deprived of funding since the fiscal year began July 1, 2015. Excuse me. Republicans, meanwhile, reiterated Governor Bruce Rauner's call for increased spending on elementary and secondary education in next year's budget. The vast majority of this year's spending has continued due to court orders, consent decrees, state statutes, and a small number of budget bills that have been approved by the General Assembly and signed by the governor, most notably one covering elementary and secondary education. But the programs the Senate bill covers haven't received any funding. The bill passed on a 39-18 vote, garnering enough support to override a potential veto from Rauner. State Senator Heather Stearns, Democrat of Chicago, one of the bill's sponsors, said it would allow universities, community colleges, social service providers, and others to get in line for payment from the state. Before we decimate our higher education institutions here, before we decimate our community service providers that we need as our partners, we need to get them into the queue so that they can actually get paid, Stern said. But State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, said doing that would be telling someone to get in the back of the line at a bank that's already been shut down. You're telling people get to the back of the line after the bank has already shut the doors, Rose said. Democrats argued that without spending authorization, those programs have no hope of ever receiving money. At an Appropriations Committee hearing earlier in the day, University of Illinois President Timothy Killeen expressed the school's support for the bill while also calling on lawmakers and the governor to work with universities to come up with a long-term plan to stabilize higher education funding. It would be a ruinous legacy of the legislative branch and the administration branch to somehow destroy public higher education in this state, Killeen said. Testifying at the time, at the same hearing, was Comptroller Leslie Munger, who estimated that the state's backlog of unpaid bills could reach $10 billion by June 30th, not counting any new spending authorized by the Senate bill. However, Democrats noted that the bill could authorize payments to entities with which agencies under the governor's control have signed contracts. That includes a $38 million deal with Amtrak that the Rauner administration announced in February. The path forward for the legislation is unclear. The House passed a similar measure earlier this month that would spend about $100 million less and is tied to a bill that would forego repayment of $454 million borrowed from special funds to plug holes in last year's budget. Neither chamber is scheduled to return to Springfield until the first week of April. Rauner has indicated that he'll veto either version if it reaches his desk. Rather than adding billions to our debt and risk further delaying payments to social service providers, the General Assembly needs to stay in Springfield and negotiate a balanced budget alongside structural reforms that create jobs and grow our economy, spokeswoman Catherine Kelly said. Meanwhile, state Republicans held a news conference Thursday, calling on Democrats to join them in supporting the governor's plan to fully fund general state aid to public schools for the first time in 7 years. The state aid formula includes a minimum amount of funding that is designated to be required to be sent to our schools so that all of our students across the state have a foundation level of educational support, State Senator Jason Berrickman, Republican from Bloomington, said. State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, leading proponent of overhauling the state aid formula, said the foundational level is a fictional number that doesn't address funding inequalities. Democrats who want to change the formula before putting more money into the system are still waiting for a district-by-district breakdown of Rauner's proposal, Menar said. Annual survey finds fewer homeless people. Decatur. Macon County's homeless population has been reduced by one-third, in part because of a new action team has slashed the number of chronically homeless by twice as much. The total went from 238 individuals in 2015 to 157 in 2016, while the number of chronically homeless dropped two-thirds from 67 to 23 over the same period. These were among the results of the most recent point-in-time survey announced Thursday during a Macon County Continuum of Care breakfast at the Good Samaritan Inn. Kaylee Smith of Macon and Addie Smith of Franklin Grove, both senior human service majors at Millikan University, said these numbers are the lowest the continuum has ever seen since it began conducting the census in 1994. Addie Smith also noted that a local chronic homelessness action team, along with a change in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's definition of chronic homelessness, impacted the results. By November 1st, the team had compiled a list of about 120 people living on the street, not including categories also counted in the annual survey as chronically homeless, including those staying in a shelter. Jeff Mueller, director of men's services at the Salvation Army, reported Thursday that 26 are in the process of getting housing through Homeward Bound, Decatur Housing Authority, and other programs, and that the team is about to tackle another 24 names. Todd Tuggle, director of the Oasis Day Center for the Homeless, is co-leader of the team, and other members are Hilda Marjoram and Ashley Garner of Homeward Bound and Julie Mavick, who runs Lutheran Child and Family Services Veterans Assistance Program locally. The Continuum formed the team last year to help achieve a goal in the City of Decatur's 10-year plan, namely to eliminate chronic homelessness by 2020. Partners in Homeward Bound are Dove Inc., City of Decatur, Community Investment Corporation of Decatur, Decatur Housing Authority, Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation, and Heritage Behavioral Health Center. In addition, HUD now defines chronically homeless people with a disability who have been homeless for more than a year or who have experienced at least 4 episodes of homelessness in the previous 3 years that add up to at least 12 months. The addition of the 12 months or more requirement excludes more people from the category. More than 75 people at the breakfast also heard about the success of a new format for the annual point-in-time survey and the new database into which to plug the information and analyze it. Alex Tooth, a senior accounting information systems major at Millikan from Decatur, said 99% of the survey respondents were willing to give their full names, something new that will greatly assist agencies in trying to help them. Brock Taylor, a senior information systems major from Riverton, also said data entry took much less time. Last year it took 6 months to get the numbers. This year it took 6 weeks. The database was created by a Millikan class taught by Assistant Professor Richard Podeshi at the Tabor School of Business, while Mary Garrison, Associate Professor of Social Work, has served as the point-in-time coordinator for 2 most recent surveys, this last time assisted by Addie Smith and Kaylee Smith. The work was supported by a $6,000 performance learning enhancement grant awarded to Podeshi and Garrison that continues through the next academic year. Other results presented by Garrison students included that blacks comprise 43% of Macon County's homeless population, while making up only 17% of the total population. They also reported that more than 30 beds in the community's emergency shelters were going unused January 28th, the day the 2016 point-in-time survey was conducted, as were more than 100 beds in transitional housing, and that reasons people are turned away from or reject these services include inebriation, criminal records, and requirements that clients participate in religious services. We believe some of this underusage is also due to the location of some of these shelters far away from downtown, Kaylee Smith said. We believe that emergency shelter should be just that, shelter that is provided because of an emergency. Cops say they cracked case of serial egger. Oh, this is a out of the area story. I guess I'll read it now since I read the headline. Euclid, Ohio. Police say they have finally cracked the case of who egged a Cleveland area home more than 100 times over a year. Former neighbor, 30-year-old Jason Kozan, has been charged with feloniously vandalizing the Euclid home starting in May 2014 and ending in June 2015, according to court records. Albert Clemens Sr. said that the attacks damaged his home and kept his family on edge. The lengthy investigation included undercover stakeouts, neighborhood canvassing, and testing of eggshells at a crime lab. A surveillance camera was also installed on the Clemens home. Clemens said his home was egged several times a week. He told Cleveland.com in March 2015 that whoever was responsible demonstrated a phenomenal accuracy, launching 5 or 6 at a time and often hitting the front door of the green two-story home that he and his late wife bought nearly 6 decades ago. The after-dark attacks sometimes sounded like gunshots as eggs splattered on the aluminum siding, creating a residue that strips the paint, he said. I would live and die in this house, but it's been kind of a nightmare, Clemens said last year. He used to clean up each time, but stopped because it was happening so often. Clemens said his insurer wouldn't settle a claim until police caught the vandal. So Clemens said he would wait until then to make repairs. Detectives haven't identified a motive for the eggings, Lieutenant Mike Knack said Wednesday. The eggings largely stopped once Kozan moved away. Somebody is deeply, deeply angry at somebody in that household for some reason, Lieutenant Mitchhauser said earlier. Kozan had no attorney or on record with Euclid Municipal Court. His bond was set Tuesday at $2,000. A Cayuga County grand jury will review Kozan's case for possible indictment, police said. In local news, Library City deal close to done. The City of Decatur could soon acquire the Decatur Public Library building as negotiations between the two governing bodies appear close to fruition. Library Board President John Phillips said Thursday that representatives of the two sides had met and agreed on many components of a deal that would transfer ownership of the facility at 130 North Franklin Street to the city. The bottom line of it is that I'm convinced that there are no barriers that will end up with an agreement that we can vote on and that I would at least recommend approval of, Phillips told the other board members. The Decatur City Council is likely to discuss the matter, including three or four outstanding items, during a closed session at its meeting Monday. I don't think there are anything that are a significant barrier, Phillips said. It's just a matter of everybody being comfortable with what's involved. The agreement as proposed would take effect May 1st, he said. Under the plan, the city would own the library building and take responsibility for expensive capital needs, such as repair of the dilapidated parking lot and demolition or renovation of the annex building. The library would pay rent, with the most recent public version of the proposal setting that number at $575,000 annually, including utilities. City officials would seek a tenant for unused space on the library's second floor and potentially in the annex building. Phillips said he hoped the library board would soon hold an informational meeting on the proposal for the library, employees, stakeholders, and interested members of the public. The negotiations are the latest step in what has been more than a year of uncertainty over the facility's ownership. A previous agreement that appeared close to completion last spring would have sold the library building to the Decatur Public Building Commission. Macon County offices would have moved into the library's unused space. But the City Council declined to approve the deal and in November issued its own offer to buy the building. St. Teresa students apply physics lessons to crash research. Amber Johnson was horrified to see a baby seat inside a vehicle that had been crashed by a drunken driver. I was so sad until he told me the baby wasn't in the car, said Johnson, a senior at St. Teresa High School whose physics class visited Prairieland Towing on Tuesday. But still, a dad driving drunk, what if the baby'd been with him? Teacher Kimber Wilderman said she wanted to show her students a practical application for physics, as well as let them meet and spend time with police officers in a relaxed setting. Students took measurements of the vehicles and examined the damage with guidance from the police officers who work as traffic accident reconstructionists to learn how those measurements help police determine speed and other factors after an accident. Based on the collision data they're collecting, they can figure out a lot of what happened in the accident. Though Johnson said she's more inclined to language arts and the humanities, she was fascinated by studying the crashed cars and is taking physics because it combines science and math. Wilderman worked extensively with Decatur Police Officer Craig Lunday, a member of the Fatal Accident Investigation Team. Students get to see what police officers do to reconstruct a crash. Susan Moorhead and Diane Curry, Macon County Assistant State's Attorneys, were on hand as well to explain why the information gathered by police is important to potential court cases. Moorhead said the students would also be able to see how many careers use physics, from her own work as an attorney to the police officer's field work to mechanics who repair cars. That's all we have time for today's Herald and Review, dated March 18th, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon.